7. The Gospel of Luke, Gospel of Luke, chapter 7. The miracle that I'm going to preach on tonight is one that probably is one of my favorites. I can't tell you why it's one of my favorites other than the fact that it just is. It's just a beautiful story for me. Perhaps because it happens to a family in great need. Perhaps because it's the only time in the scripture that we know of that Jesus goes to this place. And so I'm going to preach tonight on the widow of Nain's dead son. The widow of Nain's dead son. Now, she's probably not the only widow in the little town of Nain. Nain is located east of Jordan. It's a rural area. It's about 18 miles from Capernaum. It's a day's journey. Most people consider it to be a day's journey, somewhere around 20 miles. So it's just about a day's journey. Well, in chapter 7, the first 10 verses, we saw about a centurion. And this centurion was a man of great authority, and Jesus performed a miracle for him. And so, after he does this miracle for the centurion, he says, it's time for me to go to some other places. So he leaves his home base of Capernaum, and he goes about a day's journey, and he's got an entourage that is following him. And so I just have like three little easy points for you tonight. And hopefully it will be something that you can jot down or you can remember. And we'll begin in verse number 11. And the first thing that I want you to see is the unhappy circumstances. The unhappy circumstances. In verse number 11, it says that it came to pass the day after. What's the day after? The day after what happened in Capernaum. He went into a city called Nain, and many of his disciples went with him. So he has people that are following him. And then it says, and much people. So not only does his disciples follow him, but evidently just to see what he will do, you've got people from Capernaum that have followed him for a whole day's journey. Perhaps they picked some people up along the way. Maybe just to see what would go on and what Jesus would do. Well, in verse number 12, it says that when he came nigh to the gate of the city. Now remember, the gate of the city is not very wide. If you were to walk through the gates of some of these small places in Israel, many times they would be only 12 to 15 feet wide, and they would be able to have doors that would shut, and they could put bars on the doors to keep marauders out, to keep invaders out. And so they come near to the gate of the city. Behold, there was a dead man carried out, the only son of his mother. She was a widow, and much people of the city was with her. So if you look at verse 11, there were much people with Jesus. You look at verse 12, and there's much people in the funeral. And what you have is you have both of those groups, and when they are converging, they do it at the city gate. Now, Jesus is right in the middle. He's leading the group that's following in him, but he is meeting the group that is coming toward him. And no doubt, when he looks at this group, he sees right at the front, he sees probably some flute players, because they would hire people quickly to play music at the funerals. And so then he would see probably the family, which included one person. He saw the widow and the mother of the dead boy. And so there's a lot of people, and they are converging. One group is happy, one group is sad. One group is rejoicing, the other group is weeping. And so, I guess John Phillips says it as good as you can say it. He said, in one group you have the angel of death, and in the other group you've got the Lord of life. And so you see that you've got these two groups that are dead, and they have met, and one is alive, one is dead, and they're now meeting. Most of the time you would think that the funeral would take priority and that the other group would back out. It was just simply a sign of respect in Judaism. We have things like that now, especially in rural areas. Not too long ago, I was somewhere in a rural area, and there was a funeral procession that was coming our way, and everybody just pulled over to the side of the road to let them pass. Now, you don't have that happen on the interstates of Atlanta. There'll be people that'll run to Hearst off the road, right? But in rural areas, there's still respect for funeral processions. And all of you have seen that. And so, what does it say? It says that there's a dead man, and he's the only son. Now, the word son is an interesting word, because the Greek word for son, it means that he was probably somewhere around 24, 25 years of age, up to 40, which tells us that his mother was probably somewhere maybe in her mid to late 40s up into maybe her 60s. Well, he most likely died that morning, because they did not keep the bodies out of the grave very long, because they did not practice embalming. And so he most likely died. Now, we're not told how he died. We're not told that he was sick for any length of time. We're not told if he was injured and got killed somehow. The only thing we know is that he's dead. And so you've got this widow. When I think of her, I think of someone that is now bereaved two times. You think about people maybe that you know of, and it just seems as though that trouble follows them. I mean, it's like if there's going to be trouble, it's going to find them. Well, in reality, trouble comes to all of us. But in her situation, she now has lost a husband. This is not the first time that she has had to lead a funeral procession. The last time she walked in a procession, she had a son that was holding her hand. I don't know if he was a little boy when the dad died, or if he was a grown man when the dad died. But I know that at some point in her past, she had a heartache. It was like a dagger that had stuck into her soul. And now, she's having the exact same pain and heartache again. Why? Because her only son has died. Now, we find the lady in a dire strait. There's no such thing as a social safety net at this time in Israel's history. You don't get to go down to the local government agency and say, I need some assistance, and then you qualify and they give you a card to help you buy groceries. You didn't have that in ancient Israel. What you have is you've got a lady now who is not able to have any kind of income. Her husband's dead. And then perhaps her son, which may have started working the fields at an early age, now he's a man between 24 and 40, and he's died. And so there's nobody to go gather grain and winnow it and put it in any type of container so that they can have flour during the winter months. None of that. We don't even know if she's going to be able to keep her home. And so she is now at the mercy of other people. You know, you've got much people that are following her. When people die, sometimes there's an outpouring of compassion. But what's going to happen to this lady next week? What's going to happen to her a month from now? Is there going to be somebody in the little city of Nain that's going to say, come live with us, and them accept another mouth to feed? Maybe there's somebody like that. But it's not very often that people are willing to do that. And so, she's in a bad way. I often ask people at funerals to do something. I usually say something like this: I want to thank you for being here today. The family is appreciative of you being here and praying for them. And I know that over the next couple of days, you're going to stay in contact with them. But can I ask you to do it 2 weeks from now? Can I ask you to do it a month from now? Don't forget them just because the days have passed. That's where this lady is at. She's in danger. Before I leave this first thought, I want you to think about the timing involved. You've got a group coming from Capernaum. They've been walking for a day. You've got a group coming out of the city, and they meet at the exact same time in a place where both groups cannot pass at the same time. 15 minutes one way or the other, there's no congestion. If Jesus is 15 minutes earlier, he doesn't meet that funeral procession. If he's 15 minutes later, he doesn't meet that funeral procession. May I say that God's timing is always right? It's always right. The steps of a good person are ordered by the Lord. I used to get frustrated when I was driving if a red light caught me. But now my first thought is this: maybe the Lord is protecting me from something up the road. And when I have those thoughts, it gives me a contentment knowing that God is directing my path. And I hope that you'll always remember this, that the timing of God is always right in your life. If we are are really watching, we can see the hand of God in a lot of different ways. And so you think about the timing. You go for a checkup, and maybe you go a few days earlier than you'd anticipated. And then all of a sudden, the doctor catches something, and you go, you know, if I had not kept that appointment when he bumped it up, then he wouldn't have caught that. But the Lord is always directing us, and his timing is always right. So the first thing that I want you to see is the unhappy circumstance that is in our story. But the second thing that I want you to see is the unthinkable action of Jesus. Look with me at verse 13. And when the Lord, the word Lord there is an interesting word. It just doesn't mean just like a lord of in some feudal system of ancient England. It's actually, Luke uses the word Adonai. And that is the word which the Jews would speak when they would be reading their Hebrew writings, and they would come to the word Yahweh. Instead of saying that, they would say Adonai. And that's the word that Luke uses, so that it's Lord, Savior, Master. That's what he's conveying here. And so, and when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her. Now, it's not unthinkable to me that God, through the person of Jesus, has compassion. Throughout the Bible, we see that Jesus is compassionate. Part of being a human is compassion. If we have any type of heart whatsoever, there's compassion that's there. And I think that we can look and we can see the humanity of the Lord when it talks about this compassion. And the word compassion carries the idea from the deepest part of our bowels. In other words, you love and you care deeply. And that's the mindset that Luke has here as he's writing. He deeply cares about her. And he looks at her and he says, "Weep not." Is he saying it's wrong to weep at a funeral? I don't think so. Did Jesus not weep at Lazarus' funeral and his death? So I don't think that would be consistent. I think what he's telling her is to don't weep because of what I'm about to do. And so you've got the Lord that is compassionate. Isaiah 53 says that he was acquainted with grief. And so we see that the humanity of the Lord is on display. But I think that the unthinkable comes in verse 14. And in verse 14 it says, he came and touched the bier, the coffin. He walks over and he puts his hand on the coffin. Now, when we think of a coffin, we think of a box with a lid that's closed. In these times, I want you to think of a plank that maybe had some boards that were attached to the side, and the body would be wrapped in linen, and every time they would come around the body, they would put some more spices on it. And there's some people that say that in ancient times they would use as much as 75 pounds of different types of ointments for the embalming process, but usually they would leave the face open, and then when they got to the burial place, then they would cover it up. Well, that would be consistent with what took place at the burial of Jesus. Do you remember when it talked about the napkin that was folded there in the tomb? And so you've got the Lord that walks over and he touches this briar. Well, the law says that you're not supposed to basically handle dead bodies. I don't know if the briar and the body would be considered one, but I do know this. I know that ultimately the Lord does touch the boy. And so you've got Jesus that's more concerned with a mother and more concerned with a dead boy than he is about being ceremonially unclean. And so he touches the briar. And when he does that, evidently he stepped in front of the pallbearers. And when he puts his hand there, well, they're thinking, well, we got to stop. Now remember, there's a big crowd that's here. Doesn't say anywhere where Jesus' crowd that came with him ever backed out of the gate. Doesn't say that. So Jesus is there and he stops the funeral procession. And perhaps in mid-song, the flute player stops. What is he doing? I mean, we've never seen anybody stop a funeral before. I've never seen it before. And I doubt if you've seen it before. Now, I just read this afternoon about a man in Indonesia, and he was killed at his mother's funeral. What happened was they had built a huge edifice to burn her, and somehow he was to climb up on a ladder, and somehow everything slipped, and when he slipped, he fell, and that whole deal fell on top of him and killed him at his own mama's funeral. But I've never seen anybody walk over to a casket and say, stop, and look at the grieving family and say, weep not. And neither of you. But yet that is exactly what takes place in verse 14. He says, young man, I say unto thee, arise. Well, when he does that, this young man, between 24 and 40, he just sits right up. Well, that's going to get somebody's attention. And so, when he sits up, he begins to speak. Now, I don't know what he said. I don't know if he said, hello, mama, as Choir Parson's song would be. I don't know if he said, let me tell you what I saw when I was in paradise, in Abraham's bosom. I don't know if he said that. I don't know if he saw one of his buddies and said, hey. But I do know this. I know that it said he began to speak. And when he did that, Jesus simply took him probably by the hand and said, come here. Now, it doesn't say that these men dropped or let him down. But I think that logic would dictate that they didn't have him jump from way up here. So they probably had him let down, and when Jesus reached out and took him by the hand, he just spun around, stood right up, and Jesus took him over and said, here's your son. It says he delivered him to his mother. And so, we have a miracle that takes place. Now, you know what's interesting? And I challenge you to do something. Several times in the New Testament, Jesus raised people from the dead. I want you to kind of research that a little bit, because I don't believe you will ever find where anybody ever asked Jesus to raise somebody from the dead. I don't think it occurred to him to ask. This mother never asked. As a matter of fact, you don't find her speaking anywhere at all. I don't know if she's just so awed like these other folks are going to be here in a few minutes. We hear about the boy speaking, but we never hear her saying, "Jesus, would you raise my boy from the dead?" And you say, well, okay, she didn't do it. But can I tell you that Mary and Martha didn't do it either? I referenced Lazarus a few moments ago. You don't ever find in John chapter 11 where Mary or Martha says, "Jesus, raise him from the dead." No, the only thing they do is they say, "If you would have been here, he wouldn't have died." They had confidence that he could heal people from sickness, but it never occurred to them that he could bring their brother back to life. What about the story of Jairus? He had a little girl that died. And he said, "Come, heal my little girl." Then they said, "Don't bother the master, she's dead." And Jesus said, "She's not dead, she's sleeping." And they laughed. But you never hear Jairus saying, "Jesus, raise my little girl from the dead." It never occurs to him. But yet when Jesus steps in, because he is God, he can raise people from the dead. Let me tell you, the God that spoke everything into existence out of nothing, he can raise people from the dead when he wants to. Now, does God do that today? He can. Now, he's not going to get one of these guys on television and do it. But I believe that if Jesus chose to, he could do it today as much as he did it when he was walking through the little village of Nain. If he wants to, he can do it. And so, the Lord delivers him to his mother. Let me give you a third point. Unexpected visitation. Look with me at verse 16. "And there came a fear on all." There was an awe. There was a reverence. I don't think that the word fear here has the idea of being terrorized. But I think that there's a wow factor that's going on here. They're going, "Did you see that?" I mean, we were taking this guy outside of the city over to the caves where we bury people. And all of a sudden, Jesus puts his hand on the coffin. He stops it and he says, "Arise." I can't believe that boy set up like that. And then he began to talk. And they were awed. They were in fear of what they had seen. And they began to glorify God. They began to just praise the Lord. And then they began to murmur among themselves, and this is what they said. They said that a great prophet is risen up among us. Can I tell you that they missed it? Now, no doubt they're thinking about some great prophets in the Old Testament. They're thinking about Elijah. They're thinking about his successor, Elisha. You see, over in 2 Kings chapter 4, there's a story of a woman. She's called the Shunammite woman. And she's got a boy that dies. And the great prophet Elisha raised that boy from the dead. And for 800 years, that story has been told. I mean, from the time that that Shunammite woman's boy was raised from the dead, every generation heard about the great prophet Elisha that followed in the footsteps of the great prophet Elijah. And for 8 centuries, that story's been told. And now, here in the city of Nain, in this little small town, you've got this man of God that raises somebody from the dead. And they go, we've only heard stories about this. This has got to be a great prophet. The truth of the matter is, he's a great God. You see, Elijah and Elisha, they did it by the power of God. Jesus did it because he is God. And so, that a great prophet is risen among us, and that God has visited his people. The word visited carries the idea of coming to help. Think about going on visitation. We'll use somebody that has died, and what do you do during the process, the funeral process? Sometimes you go and you visit in the home. And when you go visit the folks in the home, if you're from the South, you take them fried chicken and potato salad. You want to make sure they got something to eat during this time. And do you know that tradition goes all the way back to the Old Testament? And so there is a visitation that God has given to them. He has come to help the people. And so when they think about the fact that there's been a visitation, they weren't expecting it. Oh, but God has sent a prophet among them. Well, if you look at verse 17 and 18, you see that the story begins to spread. Now, it says that this rumor. Now, today, the connotation of a rumor is bad. It's a negative thing. But when you read rumor in 1611, it has the idea of telling a report. It's not a bad thing. It's telling what's happened. We would say that we're giving an accurate report about what took place. And so this rumor or this report of him went forth throughout all of Judea and all the region round about. And then they come along and they say, but we got something else to do. And so there were some disciples of John the Baptist that had been watching. Do you know that some of Jesus' disciples at the beginning were disciples of John the Baptist? You ever remember a guy named Andrew? He was a disciple of John the Baptist. There were some more that were disciples of the Baptist. Oh, but they said, let's go tell John, because they considered him to be a prophet. According to Malachi chapter 4, they talked about how that the Lord was going to send Elijah. And most people think that when John the Baptist came, he came in the spirit of Elijah, and he was the last of the Old Testament prophets. And they said, let's go tell John what we're seeing. Well, what are some takeaways from our passage tonight? Let me give you two of them. First thing is, heartache is common to everybody. Doesn't matter who you are. Whether I start with myself, go back here to Brother Keith, and just come all the way across this auditorium from one side to the other, take care of everybody in the sound booth, anybody that's on security, anybody that may be singing downstairs, any of that stuff. At some point in your life, trouble's coming. Nobody is immune to it. Every time I walk through a funeral home and I look at a casket, every time I walk through a cemetery and I see a headstone or a footstone, I'm reminded of what sin does. Sin brings forth death. Nobody is immune to it. And I'm going to tell you, this old world is flooded with tears. Tonight, we've got people that are in this congregation and they've been touched by the death angel. Their families have. We've got folks that are about to be touched by the death angel. Heartache is something that we all will face. And when heartache comes, it gives you and I the opportunity to minister to those people that are hurting. You know, when everything's going great, people don't always have time for God. But when trouble comes, sometimes that's God's way of getting people's attention. There's no doubt that when this young man died, his mother began to weep. First of all, because it was her boy. She probably began to remember when he was just born and how happy she and her husband had been that God had given them a son. But then she probably began to think about the situation that she was in. And it tells us that there were much people with him. And so maybe she was a lady that had friends, and or maybe she just simply, because of her plight, maybe the people in the little town just had some compassion on her, but it was going to be short-lived. But I know this. I know that she had heartache, and Jesus helped her during that time. And so heartache is something that comes to everybody. But let me give you a second thing as a takeaway. Heartaches can be healed. They can be healed. We aren't left without help. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse number 4 says this, "Who comforted us in all our tribulation, that we may be able to comfort them which are in any trouble, by the comfort wherewith we ourselves are comforted of God." In other words, we've got a Lord that no matter the troubles that we've got will give us comfort. I can't explain it, but there have been times in my life when we have gone through deep waters, but there's been a peace which passes all understanding that comes from God. And I've seen that in the lives of many, many people, where that the peace of God in trying circumstances comes through. These people will never be the same again. When you see somebody raised from the dead, that means you're different. And can I tell you that by their actions, it shows that they were different? They began to tell everybody about Jesus. They began to share it with everybody in Judea and in the region all around Judea. All through that wilderness where John the Baptist would preach, all the word was spreading. Jesus can help you when you got trouble. And he can help us tonight when we've got trouble. The widow of Nain, it started out in an unhappy way, but it ended up with great, great joy and happiness because Jesus is God. Let's stand together. Thank you.